Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
situation in your life where you require legal advice, I ask very politely that you hang up on your phone. Disconnect from this call. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here, being that on any of these calls for that matter. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the other programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, an attorney, or a member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my suggestion, it's not advice, just a suggestion that you get an attorney, someone your state sanctions to give advice in law. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. Just people saying what they might do, were they similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're going to just get folks' opinions on what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions. Nonetheless, it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. Let's go over a few things here with Your Remedy in the Law quite quickly. First of all, I'll take everybody to the homepage of yourremedyisinthelaw.com. Look at the upper right-hand corner where you'll see a little picture of the Constitution. You click on that, and a separate place will come up with just two items on it. These two items are certainly most important, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly, on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is a 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known as AmJur or American jurisprudence. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America operates. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means that you have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you will find yourself in. I might add that for every hour of this 24-hour course, you may consider 10 to 15 hours of studying just what's in that 1 hour. On the right is a common law default process. It's nationally known for its high win rates and traffic tickets throughout the country. At least that's what it is most popularly acquired for, but that's not really why it's on this page. The reason we have it up here is with a jurisdictionary course is that when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it's kind of a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's the first time that they are committing to actual action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate in traffic scenarios being such a common problem in this country today. The common law defaults, also known for traffic purposes, has many other remedies and applications as well for most scenarios that you find yourself in where there is no damage or to property, to a person. It's just some government official claiming you broke a rule. Therefore, you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very reasonably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedy is in the Law, you'll probably be familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremedyisinthelaw.com, you will be met with a blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue onto the site you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we're doing this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects as well as many other features and study groups that at Your Remedy is in the Law. YourRemedyInTheLaw.com is just one of a couple of dozen, websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll just do that at your leisure. Do you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation? If that's so, email me at mm@yourremedyisinthelaw. Or you can call the 800 number, 800-625-4250, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we are able to. Grassfire Communications, formerly known as Statewide Communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's the map of the United States you can see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables you to speak with one another on a local level, a local venue level, based on a very strict, pre-decided topic of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. It's actually a very easy setup, you know, just continuing here, click there, put your zip code here, click next, that sort of thing. And then we'll walk you through the remainder of the setup, and then you get to the point, we'll ask you, what are your interests? What are you interested in? This could range from anywhere from credit card issues, home foreclosures, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, perhaps personal health rights. Anything that you can think of that is, in effect, your personal life in one way or another, you should find in this list or something that's close enough to be related to it. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together like you'd think of it, a social network. Not that you're in a social network. It's just very custom, very private. It then puts you in contact with people in your local venue that have a common interest to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back into the hands of the common man. If you're in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, well, you just jump online one day and say, well, this happened to me today. And the first person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. And then the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do if I were similarly situated. I'd watch these specific YouTubes, and then I'd go down to the local law library at the county courthouse and get a law dictionary and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, that all sounds great, but there's a particular website you could check out that has educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then you could go and do some due diligence on what you're reading. Just people, self-suggestions, people's opinions. But if you do this, if you do your due diligence and educate yourself, perhaps the further you got into it, you discover that it's not as difficult as you initially thought, and it would be because you focused on one single subject, and you've got to get to the point where you're investigating yourself now, and you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that, and that's all that we're trying to do here at Grassfire Communications. It's very simple to get people started talking again amongst themselves. Of course, there is no cost for using Grassfire Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we're hopeful that you'll pass this information around. If this is not an option for you today, there's always Freedoms Radio, freedomsradio.com. If you're on the road and you don't want to deal with the card process, your remedy is in the law, and you don't have your username and password with you, well, therefore you can just see the phone number and PIN. And by the way, if you want to pick up membership too, your remedy is in the law.com is very easily. You just simply click on the registration button, and so that's your basic information placed there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate, and after that it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your bank card or your PayPal. Did you know every single call is recorded? Years of archives to go through, a vast knowledge of knowledge, a wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night the calls go out over the air, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific. There's also the question box there where you can type in your question, click submit as long as it's within certain call hours, and your written question will pop up on the moderator screen. Well, we'll do our best to read every single one of these questions out over the years as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get to talk directly with the information provider like you would by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. And there's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio. So no matter where you are in your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, your buyer beware. Your remedy is in the law, is under the umbrella of Americans Restoring America. When you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you're doing just that. Information providers' payments for advertising are at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider, along with other expenses that you might have or they might have associated with your particular product or service. So when you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, your issues, and quickly deduce from a list of folks that, honestly, most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. And then we make those introductions. Not all teaching efforts by the information provider is always going to be successful. Everyone always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. The things do happen. Bad things happen. And when they do, you have to wrestle with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. Again, we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions on that, we welcome you to visit yourremediesinthelaw.com/testimonials. And there you'll see what others have to say about these products and services. Now let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not at Your Remedies in the Law, anyway. Of course, when you call in and you go with a particular information provider, that's exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or credit should be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider. And even then, it's very few and far between circumstances that are going to be worked. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, and pertaining here to all the information providers at Your Remedies in the Law, we've got to remind everyone that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that the speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn. But please, you must always be civil. The size of a question, if closed properly and then answered properly, then we should all learn something from it. All right. Well, that's my rant for this evening. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn the call over to our speaker's host this evening.
And that would be me. So,
good evening. Thank you, Michael, for that very kind and gracious introduction. Do we also have GW on the line?
Yes, we do. Hello, GW.
Hello.
How you doing, buddy?
Hey.
doing good.
This evening. Okay. Did somebody have some good news they wanted to share first?
No, it was good news that I'm saying hello to GW.
Oh, okay. Well, okay, wonderful. Tonight we're going to cover miscellaneous traffic cases and your traffic stop and the court for your traffic. Hang on a second. Excuse me, I muted out while I was coughing there. Please forgive me. The reason I have GW on it tonight is we're going to do after a short introduction here, we're going to do a little tag team, and I'm going to share a couple of personal experiences and maybe one or two from other individuals about traffic stops. Now, I recently, personally, and I was going to have GW share some things after that, I recently made the mistake of being in a very, very bad hurry. And my vehicle was locked in the parking lot, and somebody loaned me their vehicle. And I transited through the town in the Houston area that is known to have the most, shall we say, stringent regulations regarding traffic violations, and the officers that paired with it that give it that extra attention to detail. And one officer, I was at a Republican women's convention meeting, and this particular officer by name came up at two of the ladies had gotten tickets for doing 7 miles over the limit and got convicted and paid tickets that were over $300. by the judge when they try to appeal, you know, and went to court. I was traveling, and I looked down, and much to my chagrin, about a mile before I entered this township's proper, the instrument cluster went blank. I had no idea how fast I was doing, and I didn't know how much. I knew there was still gas in it because it, it turns out a fuse blew. Well, I was in a horrible, horrible hurry that someone actually had a life-threatening condition, and I was running over to the doctor's house to pick up her bag and the medication that she'd instructed me to pick up. So I would like to believe I had a legitimate reason for, you know, putting a little bit of coal to the fire. Well, this vehicle, I thought I was in a 55. There was no traffic at all. There was zero traffic, and this vehicle rode so smooth. It was just unbelievable. And all of a sudden, I got a bubblegum machine pulling up behind me. And I pulled over, and he walks up and says, I'd like your license and your insurance, you know. And as I was pulling over, I took my wallet out of my pocket, set it on the dash, pulled out my ID, and had the insurance certificate, you know. I found the insurance certificate for the car. It turns out it was in the overhead, you know, the overhead visor. But I had it sitting on the dash. I had all the windows rolled down before I came to a stop. And I took the keys out and tossed them all the way in the front of the dash, all the way to the window, and put my hands at 10 and 2 on the steering wheel. Well, the officer walked up and says, yeah, I see your license and insurance. And I says, it's right there. Would you like me to get it for you? He says, yes, please. And with one hand, I grabbed my what I drive on, and the other hand, I grabbed the insurance certificate, and I passed it to him, and I put my hands immediately back on the steering wheel. He says, do you know why I stopped you? I says, I'm not aware of that. He goes, you're doing 87 in a 45. And I says, sir, I thought this was a 55. He says, you're still going way over the speed limit. He says, I'll be right back. And he came back and he says, this is what you drive on? I says, yes. He says, do you have anything that's issued, any ID that's issued by the U.S. government? I says, yes, sir. It's in that wallet right there. And I says, would you like me to get it for you? He says, yes, please. And I reached up with one hand, grabbed the wallet, and holding it toward him, I pulled my passport card out of its slot and handed it to him. And I put the wallet back on the dash and put my hands at 10 and 2. He says, I says, I'm sorry, officer. I didn't realize the rate of speed I was traveling at. He says, I'll be right back. And I was about to start to give him an explanation. He says, stop right there. I don't want to hear it. I thought, okay, that was kind of curt. He went back to his car, was back to his car, and on my cell phone, he was there over 10 minutes on the timer on my cell phone and on the clock that was on my cell phone. And I made sure that I kept my hands on the steering wheel at 10 and 2 the whole time. He didn't ask me why the vehicle wasn't registered to me or anything like that. You know, he come back. And he says, sir, here's your ID back and here's the insurance. He says, I'm not going to write you a ticket. In fact, I'm not even going to write you a warning. And I says, well, that's very gracious of you. My humble apologies for, I didn't intend to. I have a good reason. I believe I have a good reason if you'd like to hear it. He says, no, I don't need to hear it. I don't want to hear it. He says, but I'm not going to write you a ticket. And he says, you probably know already that I cannot write you a ticket. And I just smiled. And I had never heard an officer say that to me before, ever in my life. And he smiled. He says, "Could you please slow down a little bit, sir? Would that be okay?" And I says, "Yes, sir. Thank you, officer. That'll be quite fine." And he went back to his car, and I collected everything and put it away and drove off. The only thing that changed in the situation from him having a very grouchy, meouchy, woof, woof, meow, meow attitude about me was that he already had what I drive on, and he had the insurance. I gave him my passport card, and he ran it. I could see that in the rearview mirror that his card reader, magnetic stripe reader, was on the top of his PDT, his portable data terminal, and I saw him swipe it from one side to the other multiple times. And I saw him pick up his cell phone and call, you know, and there was at least two separate calls. And he came back to me and was as kind as a Mom America and apple pie person could possibly be, treated me with respect, apologized for stopping me, and apologized for the disruption. The only thing that changed was the passport card. Now, previously, I had had a situation where there was a taillight out, and I was doing 12 miles over the limit, and a taillight on the trailer, actually, one of the marker lights on the trailer, not the their brake lights, was flickering. And he had already started the ticket before he got to my get to me. All of a sudden, when I gave him the passport card, he went back, ran it, and came back and says, "Sir, I need you to wait here for a few minutes." He says, "I apologize for disturbing you. I need to wait here for my watch commander." I says, "Really? Watch commander?" He says, "Well, sir, you have a taillight or a light on the back of your trailer flickering, and you were doing over 10 miles over the limit." And he says, "Could you please slow down a little bit?" And I says, "So why do we need the watch commander? Is he going to write me the ticket?" He says, "Sir, I need him to void this ticket before you leave. And he wants to see your passport card himself." And I says, "So," and I handed it back to him. And he says, "So you need this?" He says, I'll wait right here." It wasn't 10 minutes. That watch commander probably jumped out of his chair, jumped into a car, and he probably all but broke the speed limit to get to where I was at just to see that passport card. Now, I wish I could say right now that I know exactly what they're looking at, and I don't. But in both of them, I was able to verify that they had a portable data terminal or a laptop or whatever, and they had the capacity to read the mag stripe. That was the only thing I was able to verify from both those stops. And to that end, I would like to ask GW to share about correcting your status. Could you give us 5 or 10 minutes about why correcting your status is so important? You're so much more knowledgeable about it than I am. Thank you, GW.
Ha ha. That's nice of him. This is really kind of John to say that. I've been operating and helping people to correct their status ever since somewhere around 2008. But I believe the man that was just talking has been doing it for decades longer than I have. But it's very humble of him to give me those kind of accolades. I'm bowing at your feet here. But anyway, thank you, Brother John, for that illustration. You know, there's numerous stories that we could tell. What I want to how I want to frame this, though, is that, first off, let's just talk about the correcting your status with the highest department of the federal government in the United States of America, which is the State Department, U.S. State Department, out of Washington, D.C., which all of their sub-state departments that are basically there in every state, in not every city, but usually every major city, okay, that you can come in contact with, have a U.S. State Department facility. Oftentimes, you'll find that there's other organizations and whatnot that can do expedited passports for corporations and things like this. They're a third party. We're not talking about those. And up until a little bit after COVID and the change that happened with the way things were done, some of the rules with the State Department, we used to go to the post office, which had somebody that was trained by the State Department there to work both as a post person and a official administrator with the State Department to do and certify records and pass on the information to the State Department. We now, as of a couple years ago, started taking people through what's called a faster, more urgent type of passport application process, and there's a trigger that triggers that, and it's the urgency is that you're either flying out of the country within about 2 weeks from the time, or less than 14 days from the time you're trying to make that appointment, and you have a need to get that passport done, okay, and because you already have a ticket, you have a hotel, that you can show credible evidence when you actually get to your appointment that this is true, and then we get the passport done that day, all right, all in about 3 to 4 hours. And the reason that we do that is because the information that we provide you with, which it certifies you as an American national and not a United States citizen, okay, for purposes of this back channel information that will be added to your passport information and also the information that draws up when you give them your passport card, which is, by the way, it says travel card, by the way, on that card, which not every police department has the capability of running, but if they really want to, they can. They can find a way. Most of them do. And so this is why we're talking about this remedy about correcting your status from that of being a 14th Amendment citizen, which is what most everybody is, if they have not gone through the process of using affidavits and the right terminology to correct their status and knowing how to do it. This is one of the things that we do and help people through the process of. And so that you can get a hold of, if anybody on the line here that is interested in finding out more about that, they need to contact Michael. He'll be telling you the contacts at the end of this call to make to him. But we can help you through that process. It doesn't take too long. Usually take somebody that is halfway decent with a computer, okay, that can at least fill out and do some things with Word documents and things like that. It doesn't take anybody that long, okay. So with that being said, what I was trying to get across to whoever's listening here is that We have a lot of great stories. John's got some great stories. I've got many clients that have, you know, wonderful stories and have heard lots of different, you know, things that have happened out there. But there's always this, there's always a time where you're going to get somebody that won't run that card, okay? And that, you know, you maybe at a time where you get a little choked up, okay, because it is a little bit of a emotional situation when you got this trooper out there. So it's always good, and it's always a great place to remember in your mind that God and His Word has told us to, you know, to fear nothing, okay? And He also told us He didn't give us a spirit of fear, but of power and love and a sound mind. And you have to keep that sound mind when you're in that situation, because they're trained to escalate things if they feel threatened, and you just don't want to give them any reason to be threatened. If you're like me and you like going on YouTube every once in a while and watching these crazy stops that happen, or these police chases, okay, that are, for me, more fun than watching, you know, Fast and the Furious, because, you know, it's real. But you see a lot of people make some terrible mistakes with the way they talk to the officer. And they might be yelling at them and screaming at them and saying, I don't answer questions. And, you know, if you've watched some of these, you've seen a lot of that, okay, especially lately, because it's just being parroted by all kinds of different people when they're getting pulled over now. The cool thing about getting your passport and your passport card, by the way, this is just one of the many fringe benefits of having the passport card is a traffic stop. Okay, there's many other things to getting your status corrected that are major benefits besides just what we're talking about here. But this little side benefit of being able to literally hand an officer that form of ID, okay, is pretty cool, because you're not having to sit there and argue and tell them, you know, do you have an articulatable, you know, infraction of the law? You have a suspicion. What's your suspicion? How do you see me? You know, are you just fishing? Or, you know, all these things that people are saying, you don't have to do any of that. Now, I do suggest, and I think Brother John does too, that when you're interfacing with a Leo or what an officer is, that you, when they say and ask you for your driver's license, okay, you want to be very polite and kind and just say, you know, I don't drive. You know, that's a commercially regulated activity. I travel, okay, which is my God-given right, all right? So those are really easy things to remember. I travel because that's one of my God-given rights, you know, backed up by the Constitution, but it's one of my God-given rights. And what's interesting about that is you have a card that says travel card on it, okay? It doesn't have anything to say. It doesn't say anything to do with a license. Like your state license would, okay? So when you hand them that travel card, even if they're arguing with you, just say, listen, I understand, you know, please just run that. If you don't allow them to get you into a lather and you can stay on point and be kind, just assertive, usually they either run it or they'll just – I've had some of my students. They've argued with him for a while, and after a while, they just shove it back. You know, I had one of my friends, they just shoved it back into his chest while he's sitting there. He said, okay, get out of here, you know. And he said, well, thank you, officer. And he left. And so, but there's always, there are times. I've got a real close friend who's part of the think I've mentioned her before. She's part of the here in Arizona, the Carrie Lake People campaign helps out with a lot of things here. She works through the Arizona. She's a lobbyist. Anyway, she got stopped, and this was after she had her status correct, and she got a mean son of a gun. And he just really took her, just the way that he was going about it. And you know, there was extra things that we had to do, which, by the way, Brother John and his team also do for people, which is do, you know, certain court filings and administrative paperwork and things like this. And we had to do a bunch of that stuff till they finally just gave up, okay? And that's, sometimes that does happen. You know, it's not always that everything just works out hunky-dory and they leave or they do something like they just, what happened with Brother John, where they say, listen, I can't even give you a ticket. So it's not a guarantee, but what's really awesome about having your status corrected and knowing these things and knowing how to speak is that you're put in a position to prevail way ahead of everybody else, okay, in these situations. And so that's one of the reasons to do it just from that standpoint is that you're putting yourself in a much, much better position to be able to win, be able to get a good remedy. And so I hope that helps a little bit of the explanation there, Brother John.
Thank you very much, GW. Yeah, thank you very, very much for your enlightenment there. I always learn something from you every single time we chat. Every man is my superior that I might learn from him. Every man is my teacher that I might learn from him. And I learn from you all the time. Thank you. And as GW was saying, it's not a hard and fast. My wife got stopped. She pulled out her passport card, and it turns out that there was mud on the license plate, and as she was passing through a toll booth, the officer stopped her, says, you can't, you know, the toll booth automatic tolling thing cannot read your license plate, and apparently he had some way of telling that it didn't happen in the lane she was in. And he says, I'm citing you for, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And and he wrote her a ticket, you know, and she gave him her what she drove on and the passport card. And because she has a Texas state driver's license, he didn't even go to the passport card. He just looked at it, and apparently he did take it to his car, but he obviously didn't run it. My son drives on an international, he does not have a Texas driver's license, neither do I. And so the passport card is always our quick draw, the first thing that we pull out. And I realized that now that what I do is I say, you know what, I'm having trouble finding what I'm driving on, but here's some ID if you'd like to get started. And, you know, and I have permission to check the glove box, you know. And I ask them before leaning over, and I tell them, I tell you what, I'll open the glove box, and you can just, if you want, you can look and verify there's no bricks, knives, or sumo wrestlers. I never use the word gun, but I laugh. I tell them, I says, you know, you can check to make sure there's no bricks, knives, or sumo wrestlers hiding in there so that, you know, I want you to understand that I respect and appreciate you willing to wear the badge and the uniform and carry the gun in to protect and serve the public trust, and that means a lot to me. And to that end, I want you to feel completely comfortable. Is it okay if I, you know, and by that time they say, yeah, go ahead, I'll be right back. And that's when they take the passport card and run it, the ones that can. And I don't know what they're looking at, but 3 out of 4 times that they run the passport card, they come back and they say, could you please get your taillight fixed? Can you please slow down? Can you come to a full stop at that stop sign? You know, I had a 17-year-old girl, Orange County. She drives on an international, and she has her passport card. She corrected her status, it's 7 or 8 years ago, when the family was getting ready to travel to South America on a STM, a short-term mission trip, and the other 3 children did as well. Well, she not only rolled a stop, but she was doing 45 in a school zone 25, and they had her out of the car in handcuffs, and they were running, and they had, and not just out of the car in handcuffs, but they had her in the back seat of the patrol car, and they had 2 cars there. One was a male officer, one was a female, and they had her in the female officer's back seat, and all of a sudden, Shelley said that both officers came up and opened both doors on both sides of the car and says, could you please step out? And as the male officer started taking the handcuffs off of her, the female officer says, please excuse our behavior. We apologize for any inconvenience we're talking to. Could you please slow down in a school zone? It's, there's people – there's just your age there that could be harmed, and she asked him and says, well, why are you letting me go? And she says, and the female officer said, unless you clearly constitute a threat to the public, she says, we're not going to write you a ticket. And that's what she told Shelley, a 17-year-old. And this was only like 10 months ago. It was in Orange, California, that happened. And so, you know, it's, you know, like GW was saying, it's not a guarantee. It's a hit or miss. But now, if you end up going to, you know, getting a invitation to discuss your performance before a bench, many jurisdictions, what they do is, especially the more populated jurisdictions, especially if it's like Miami or New York City or Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania or Los Angeles, or I'll speak to Houston right now, the court invites the assistant district attorney or somebody from their office to be there on the day that they have people processing in. And, you know, and there's the clerk's line, you know, and sometimes the clerk's lines are abominably long, but what they'll do is, like here, it's a common practice where the ADA will walk out in this long line, you know, and say, is there anyone that would like to consider alternate resolutions on their ticket, including driving school or, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Would you please line up on this side of the hall and come see me, you know, and what happens is that I hardly recommend that you call over the court and find out if your court allows that and has an ADA there on the – and it's like we had one student that they only do it on Fridays. We just found out this week, you know, we were talking to him. He's in a smaller town in Iowa, and I just had somebody from Muskogee Oklahoma, and a couple of other towns, and one from Lawton, Oklahoma, that both commented that their town is so small that they don't even let you speak to the DA unless 2 of the 3, including our student, he commented that they said I had to file a notice of pro se before I could speak to the district attorney, and then I had to go to the judge. But if you get a chance, explore that and make sure you do it not just days early, but a week or two, a couple weeks early, and go and talk to the district attorney. And if you have a genuine issue or why this ticket, this traffic ticket or other kind of infraction, including like, you got cited for the dog getting out or, you know, a whole host of things, your property infractions or things, litter or whatever, talk to the district attorney and see if, because they have the power to dismiss the charge before it goes to court. And if you have a genuine complaint or concern, they'll also usually, you can ask them, well, if you're not able to dismiss it, do you have, what are the options and opportunities that if you were in my place, and use that phrase, if you're in my place, what would you recommend? And what you'll find, they'll say, well, in your case, I would absolutely do traffic school because if you, and tell them, you know, you believe you're innocent, speeding, it was 22 over the limit in the school zone on the sidewalk, but you believe you're innocent. Say, you know what? I feel very, very strongly about this. I feel compelled to fight this ticket, but I, right now, my schedule is such that I don't really have time, and use the term, I don't have time for a jury trial if I can possibly help it. And the ADAs, they do not like to go to jury trials. If you have a matter before a judge, the judge can, you know, if he got out of bed on the wrong side, stepped on a tack that morning, or his stocks came in low, you're at the mercy of one person's bad morning, or if that cup of coffee was really tasty, the good morning. But usually for traffic matters, small matters, you won't have a jury of 12. You only have six, you know. And if you've got a serious concern or an issue, and you say, hey, look, had that officer written me a ticket, I would have talked to the ADA and said, hey, look, here's the doctor's name. I was going to their house. I had the key in my hand to pick up the bag and the medication. I'm sorry. I got excited. I was going, and the instrument cluster went dark, and I didn't know. And that car that they loaned me, the doctor's car, is so smooth and right. I had no idea. I would have said that to the ADA. And then if it didn't work with the ADA, it says, well, I'm not comfortable. We're just going to send you to trial. And I'd like to enter a plea of not guilty and have the matter set for trial. And the ADA can do that. And she'll say, well, go in there and see the clerk, have it set for trial. And when it comes time for the jury, ask for a jury trial. Now, the first part of the trial, and I'm going to truncate a little bit of what I'm saying here, but sometimes your first opportunity to get it dismissed is potentially the ADA. Okay, your second opportunity to have it dismissed and dismissed for want of prosecution is the officer must show up to testify against you at your trial or your hearing. If the officer had a bad hair day, gets stuck out on patrol, got called to take care of another case, for whatever reason, doesn't show up, they call the trial at 9 o'clock, and there's three jury trials that day, and it's 10 o'clock, and the officer's still not there, and they call your name, and they call the officer, and it's 11 o'clock. Finally, the judge will say, sir or ma'am, we're going to just dismiss your ticket. Have a nice day. Can you please step over to the clerk here and take care of the paperwork? And they'll dismiss it. That's your second chance to get it dismissed. Now, some of you who saw the movie Karate Kid, remember Pat Morita and Ralph Macchio, they did a great job. They were a great pair. you know, and Danielson, Ralph, played by Ralph Macchio, and one of the sequels is standing on one foot on this, it looks like a huge telephone pole, but it's a piling for the dock at this outside this fish cannery that Mr. Miyagi, played by Pat Morita, was showing him. And he's sitting there dodging this big, steely, pointy, hooky thing, you know, and he's back and forth. And Danielson's complaining, but Mr. Miyagi, you haven't taught me how to take a punch yet. You know, if they come in contact with me, they'll smear me. You know, you got to teach me how to take a punch. Mr. Miyagi, you're not doing a good job. You know, and Pat Morita plays the part so good. He's just shaking his head, looking down. And, you know, and he goes, and he hits the release, and that big hooky, shaley thing goes flying by again. And Danielson's dodging it while bouncing on one foot. And he goes, Danielson, best defense for bad punch, not be there. You know, and it was, you know, and to the point is that GW's approach, and if that works, is that don't end up in court. And if you're the mom America and sweet as apple pie person that's sitting inside that car when that officer as pensively comes up, you know, every time they pull somebody over, they are concerned that, you know, that somebody's not going to treat them very nice. You give a box boy or a bellman does a good job. You know, the box boy brings your groceries out, and or your bellman, you know, loads your unloads your car. You know, you cross their palm. They, you know, you're happy with them. You cross their palm with a, you know, some coin, you know, or some paper. You know, but most officers, they do a good job of protecting and serving or stopping somebody, and their customer, us, the people, and whether they actually have one or not, are thinking they would love to ask them to suck on a 38 caliber straw, you know? And so that's very counter motivating. And when you're in one of the professions that has the highest fatality rate in the world, and here in the U.S., it is the highest in the world, you know, when you're strolling up to, and I say strolling, when you're walking up, you're a little pensive and tense if this guy's going to shoot you right through the door or, you know, somebody else in the car is going to shoot you. And so if you walk up and you're just sweet as mom American apple pie, and you unalarm them, you let the valve stem out of their pensiveness, you have a smile, they see your keys are up in the windshield there, you're not going to take off on them, your wallet's up there, your hands are at 10 and 2 on the steering wheel, you know, that's very disarming. And they appreciate that, and they smile. And the chance that you won't end up in court is much higher when you do that. Or you'll have less of an issue to deal with. Now, do you know how fast you're going? What you do is you have the right against self-incrimination. Well, officer, how fast do you think I was going? Answer their questions by asking a question. You know, you know why I stopped you? Why did you stop me? You know, and what happens is that all of this, if you end up in court and for the jury trial, that's all. Everything you say can and will be used against you in the court of law. When they convene the trial, you're going to go in there and they're going to call the docket. And if the officer did show up and says, Mr. Noe, the state versus Noe, is the officer ready? And the ADA will say, yes, sir, he's right here, or no, sir, he's not. And this is, when do you expect the officer? Well, we're hoping he's going to be in. Okay, Mr. Noe, are you here? Yes. Mr. Noe, could you please wait till the officer gets here? Okay, they call him once or twice, or maybe he's there, and they says, okay, are you ready to commence trial? We're going to schedule your trial for, it's 9:30 right now, we're scheduled for 11 o'clock, and could you please wait here in the courtroom? Don't leave. And then they'll call your case, and they'll say, state versus Noe, simple speed. And you'll and they'll But before you get there, you know, and they'll say, we'd like to select a jury. And the jury, the technical term is called voir dire. That's the Latin for, you know, jury selection. And what you do is you'll ask a few questions. And ask questions like, and there'll usually be, they'll fill all 12 seats with potential jurors and a few in the front row there in the side. And what you do is say, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, when it's your turn to ask questions, because the ADA will ask first their questions first. And what you do is you say, I'm going to ask you all the same questions. First of all, have you ever been accused of speeding when you were certain that you were not? And that's one of the questions I'm going to ask you. And then, or have you ever been accused of speed when there was, you knew you had a good reason, you had to be somewhere, like that tall, funny-looking guy that was trying to get the medication for the doctor to administer. You know, have you ever had somebody cite you potentially while you know, you had your daughter in the back and she had cut her foot on a glass bottle and you were trying to get to the hospital? Have you ever had somebody stop you and protract out when it's a victimless crime, when nobody was injured, but the injury is occurring to your daughter while she's bleeding out in the back seat? So pick questions that will invest the jury's hearts into your situation during jury selection. And, you know, when you ask those questions and somebody says, yeah, just note on your little sheet that you want them as a juror. And then it's after jury selection, then the judge is going to start, is he Mr. Prosecutor, Madam Prosecutor, would you like to start? Because the prosecution calls the first witness, the officer, and on this such and such a date, and they're going to elicit facts. Well, that's all they do during this portion. You know, and you say, were you on duty on such and such a date? Did you observe such and such a vehicle? What time of day was that? What were the road conditions? What was the temperature outside? Was it light or dark? You know, and they'll ask these questions. How did you detect that they were speeding? Were you pacing them with your car, or did you have radar, et cetera? When was the last time you had your radar gun calibrated? And if they don't ask that question, you ask it. You know, when was the last, when you come to cross-examine the witness? But what happens is that they're going to list, and then how fast did you clock or did you detect this vehicle going, Mr. Noe? And he'll say they were doing a 37 and a 25. And thank you, Your Honor. And what is the posted limit in that area? It is 25. Okay, the prosecution has no more questions for this witness. And they'll say, defense, you may cross-examine the witness. Says, officer, when was the last time you had your radar gun calibrated, and was the calibration current? Is it out of date? And do you have a copy of that certification with you? Okay, and that's a good question. Do you have a copy of that certification with you? Don't object to anything when he says, no, I didn't. I don't know when it. But afterward, that's going to be very important. And how did you observe me? Was there any extenuating circumstances? At that time, were you aware that this circumstance existed or that circumstance? And he'll say, no, I wasn't. Did you ask the defendant, me, any of those questions? Was there a reason I was traveling at a higher rate of speed than was posted? No, I didn't, or yes, I did, and you answered this or that. And did that make a difference to you that there may have been a reason, and that what were the traffic conditions? Was it clear? Was there heavy traffic or no traffic at all? Did the fact there was no traffic at all make a difference in why you stopped me? And then what happens is that then you know, when you say, I have no further questions for this witness, all you're doing is eliciting evidence. Then the judge will say, would you like to take the stand? And you can stand, usually, you know, you go up to the witness stand and they'll swear you in and say, on this date, on such and such, I was traveling this this way and I did not know my speedometer. I thought was indicating that I was 2 miles underneath the speed limit. Yes, I was aware it was a school zone. There was no other cars there. I did not have anything to gauge my flow of traffic. I had no idea. And since then, I had my speedometer checked at a speedometer facility, and I had to get it corrected or replaced or calibrated. And but I did not intentionally break the law, you know. And then they will give you a chance to then what you do is you have closing arguments, and the ADA will say, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the officer said they was doing 37 in a 25. Clearly he was breaking the law. I ask you, you can find, do nothing other than find him guilty. Then you come up, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. I had no idea that I was doing that. It was safe. It was clear. It was not my intention to create a hazard for the public. I was traveling at what I believe with the traffic and conditions to be a safe speed. At this juncture, whether it was breaking the law or not, there are no victims, and I believe at this time I'm being charged, I'm being made a criminal, but there's no injured party and there's no victims. There's just I've been criminalized by this traffic stop, and I do not believe that that is fair or right. The officer, I applaud him for protecting and serving. And at this juncture, making somebody, criminalizing somebody that is not committing a criminal act, I do not believe is right or correct. Correct me if I'm wrong, but if you had a similar situation, how would you feel? And I respectfully request, you know, your grace in this situation, and that you find me not guilty. And the jury will go out and deliberate and come back. You have three chances to be acquitted and dismissed there, and one to be convicted and found guilty. When you have a jury of your peers that are six individuals, chances are that you will twang the emotions of at least one or two of them, so you will not get a verdict, a unanimous verdict out of it, and so they will not be able to convict you. That's just a quick 40,000-foot overview of your preventative actions and your active actions should you get a traffic stop or something similar. With that, I've gone 4 minutes over at this time. We're going to open it up for Q&A. If you're able to stick to the subject matter topic, we'd appreciate that. However, during question and answer, you're free to tender any question that you deem so. Thank you for your graciousness and your patience in listening to me. Back to you, Michael.
All right. Thank you so very much. GW, what kind of discipline should we have to employ? John went over 4 minutes. That's sounds criminal to me. What do you think, GW?
Well, let's see. Let's you know, what kind of sanctions can we impose on John?
There you go. There you go.
You know,
Do we do this per minute? A sanction per minute? Is that reasonable?
Yeah, I guess.
Tie a rope around that guy's leg and drag him around the pasture.
There you go.
Get 8 big tough guys and a sumo wrestler and slime the guy. Get a 55-gallon drum of ragu spaghetti sauce.
My brothers actually did that to me one time.
Yeah. Yeah. Get a 55 of ragu spaghetti sauce and slime the guy. But GW, thank you very much for for attending with me to this class. I appreciate you very, very much.
That was a very good response you made, GW.
My honor. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hand. Press star 2. For those of you on Freedom's Radio, simply look to the center right of your monitor. You will see a place there to it's a silhouette, actually, of a rectangle laying on its side. Just left-click inside of that rectangle and type away your comment or your question. Underneath there, you'll see a place to put your name and some other relevant information. Then hit submit, and when you do hit submit, it pops up on my end, and I'll be happy to lend my voice to your comment or question. So while we're waiting for that to populate, I'll just complete the story. It would have been all right if it was a horse pasture, but it was a cow pasture. And the outcome of it was really humiliating. I don't mind getting dragged on the ground so much when I was a teenager, but it was the affluence of the cow that made it disgusting.
Holy kitty litter, Batman.
Have you ever been in a cow patty fight?
My family comes from the farm.
Well, they dry. You know, when they dry out, they dry pretty hard, and it
yep,
can hurt.
Yep, they do. And they're light, and they fly like Frisbee sometimes.
Yep.
Don't ask me how I know.
don't ask me how I know. Yeah. And then
when they're really dry, they burn really good, too.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, but they smell awful. How does he know that? Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you for joining us this evening. It was a wonderful presentation. I would add one comment on my own, and that is that if I were pulled over, and by the way, I don't tempt fate. I don't try to, you know, I've been some people, we have some students. Well, I just wanted to test it out.
We've had multiple students. One of them said, well, John, I just got this taken care of, you know, so I wanted to find out, you know, and turns out I looked up the jurisdiction. The officers and the deputies, the sheriffs and the police officers in that jurisdiction, none of them at the time had PDTs with card readers, stripe readers in their car. And this gentleman, he went and pushed on that pedal, and he was going to test out and something that he had no idea. No, please, Michael's humble encouragement about not intentionally testing something out. Please don't do that.
No, yeah, really.
I will second that. I have had not a high number, but a number of people that have made those inferences, like, oh, I want to test it out now. And it always seems not to be a good thing to sow. It's not the right seeds to sow. And
it's almost an act of arrogance.
Yeah, yeah. And we want to follow the word of God, and we want to be, we want to be upright, upstanding, and we don't really want to test fate or whatever. We want to always be in the right position to with every action we do, every action that we take, we want it to be pleasing to our Lord and Savior, and that way we know we have His protection.
Yep.
That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I would be doing had I been pulled over is I would hand the law enforcement officer the State Department pass card and simply say, I was informed that if I have any interaction with any law enforcement under any circumstance where I need to produce identification, that the I've been told that this is sufficient, that this is the Real ID, qualifies for the Real ID Act, and this is all that I would need to offer. So I'm sharing that with you. I'm sorry, I don't have a driver's license. You know, if he's asking me.
I'm glad you said that, Michael, because I want to tag along on that. You know, one of the things that I always train my people, and it's very true, the State Department ID is the highest form of ID that you can get in this land for the average person. Okay. Now, for the over average person that is a diplomat. Okay. It's still that. Okay. It's in a little bit different form. Okay. But it's the highest form of identification in the United States of America that you can get. And so that's one of the things that I train my people to say is that, listen, hey, this is the highest form of identification. There's no other department in the United States of America, whether it be the FBI or whatever. They all these different departments will defer to the State Department information on you. It's the highest form.
Right.
Yep. They all defer to that.
Yeah, I've been told that by State Department officials.
Yep.
Thank you, Greg, for coming on. With that, back to you, Michael. Thank you.
Check Freedoms Radio one more time here real quickly, do a refresh. And I want to thank you all for joining us this evening. Tomorrow night we will have a recording of Mr. Slevin. This is a live call tonight. We'll have a recording of Mr. Slevin, and he will be explaining to you the limited liability company that he offers and how it is unique in two ways. One, it does not have a liability under law to report taxes or pay taxes, report filings. It doesn't have a duty. And then secondly, it's the perfect interface when established properly with two charitable religious trusts as the managers of a limited liability company to interface with Justice Beshear's Golden Horseshoe, which we talk about on the Saturday night call. Same phone number and same PIN. So until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
Mm-hmm.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you.